has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From the sun-drenched heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert. Sharon will be along through electronic recording in just a moment. As we have company again tonight, so we'll dig back into the archives for another foundational interview that hasn't been online in quite some time. We recently presented an archive interview with Dave Duncan about what he called the year 2012 scam. But prior to that, in December of 2005, we did an interview with David Duncan about his belief that Christians were being set up to take a fall. Listen now to this archived interview with David Duncan on the New World Order scam on PID Radio.
We're pleased to welcome into the bunker by telephone from Washington State, Dave Duncan, a researcher who's put together a fascinating theory on what may lie ahead. Are Christians being set up to take a fall? Dave Duncan, welcome to PID Radio.
Well, thank you, Derek.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Sharon. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. What's the weather like out there?
Well, you know, it's sunny. It had been heavily overcast. And then yesterday, all these chemtrails, they were laying down all over the sky.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Do you find that your sinuses or anything act up right after that?
You know, I've never had that kind of reaction. And we only see these, I guess, once every month or so.
I understand
other places are even worse.
Do you ever get the little string precipitation that comes down?
No, I haven't.
Now, you're in Washington near Seattle, is that right?
No, actually, I'm in the other side of the state, north of Spokane.
Okay.
Not too far at all from mine. In fact, actually, the Idaho border is only a few blocks away.
Okay. So now you are in the sciences, am I correct?
Yes, I am.
And what do you do, David?
Oh, I'm a chemist, and I've spent most of my career doing process development chemistry. What I specialized in is the separation of organic substances out of natural mixtures, such as phenolic mixtures and terpene mixtures.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked on various methods to purify substances after they're separated out of these kind of mixtures. And in the 90s, the group that I led developed a string of patents for phenolics and dihydric phenols known as catechols. Sharon, you probably remember catechols.
Oh, I barely remember those. Organic chemistry was sort of the, you know how sometimes when you're studying, there comes a point as you're taking more and more advanced classes that you eventually hit a brick wall?
Uh-huh.
You probably never hit that brick wall.
Oh, long. Yeah, I did.
I saw the brick starting to go up as I took my second organic chemistry class.
Uh-huh.
Well, the reason I wanted to touch just a bit on your career, Dave, is to, you know, make it clear to listeners that you are someone who does have a scientific mind, someone who's familiar with the scientific method, with observation, experimentation, and replication. You know, all of the ations mm-hmm. that you have to go through in doing science, and so that you're coming at your conclusions with the
right.
mind of someone who is used to the scientific method and not someone who leaps to conclusions.
From an objective worldview.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, you've put together a fascinating website, the title of which is The New World Order Scam. And after you contacted us, Sharon very perceptively realized that you were onto something here and that we needed to talk to you and kind of kick around your ideas here, because you've come onto some things I think that Christians in particular really need to think about.
Yes.
But before we get to your conclusions or your analysis of what might be ahead, let's talk a little bit about your background, because you
sure.
come at, you might say that you began your study of chemistry in a rather unorthodox way.
A little bit early.
I hear incense and peppermint again in my hat.
Yeah, there you go. That was it.
Yeah, I did.
So I was into
amateur astronomy when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. my parents knew that, and so they bought me one Christmas, I think it was 1957, a book called Exploring Inner Space. And it was filled with just these fantastic descriptions of what it was like to take LSD. In fact, it was...
Okay, so they mistook that for a book on astronomy.
Yes, they did.
Oh! Missed it by that much.
Well, you know, this really piqued my interest because it was right about that same time in my life that I had just a very profound spiritual hunger. And so I channeled my spiritual hunger in that direction. Of course, that was a mistake, but nonetheless, we all learn.
Mm-hmm. So you then, if you were young enough to be getting Christmas gifts in the late 50s, you probably came of age in the 60s.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, were you on the West Coast during the 60s?
Uh-huh. Sure was.
So. Well, that was I was a little young to know about that myself, but I hear that that was a pretty wild time, especially.
Oh, that was. That really was. You know, my first days were in Seattle, and I used to hitchhike to San Francisco and back up and down the coast in 66 and 67. And so I spent a lot of time in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco.
Haight-Ashbury.
You know, we're going to put a link to your website because the URL's a little long. Otherwise, I'd give it out now. But you've got to go there, folks, and read all about Dave's, you know, teen years, 20s years, you know, mm-hmm. the exploration years, because it's a fascinating tale. And any of you from the West Coast, you may actually relate to it. I was actually in Indiana during the 60s, and we didn't have a whole lot of this going on.
The closest I came was in Chicago during the, you know, Democratic Convention of 1968.
Oh, yeah.
But I was 6 years old at the time, so I didn't notice.
Yeah. You were not there picketing or anything.
No. Wasn't allowed to go south of Division Street, which is two blocks away.
Well, you know what? First of all, we want to tell our listeners that you are a born-again Christian.
Yes, I am.
You weren't. I mean, you came later to that, didn't you?
It took a while to get me to come around, but I did. That was about 1982 when it finally dawned on me that that is the correct understanding of all of these things.
So how do you get from experimentation with chemistry to working as a chemist?
Well, I suppose it's a spiritual journey. And for me, you know, that began in those times of my life so long ago, and then I went to San Francisco, and I arrived in town broke, essentially, and so I didn't have much choice about things. I needed to find some kind of employment, and I went into a restaurant that was a Zen macrobiotic vegetarian restaurant, and the fellow over on the other side of the counter was a man in his 40s, and he took a look at me. We struck up a conversation. He says, well, hey, you know, we've got a house with a whole bunch of hippies living in it, and you can go there, and there's a mattress there, and all we need is, you know, you come here and work a few hours every week at the restaurant. And so I said, hey, you know, that's a pretty good deal. So I took him up on it. That began an interesting journey because it turned out that this fellow, his name was Alan Noonan. He turned out to be an occultist, and he had just an amazing comprehension of what we have all come to call the plan, which is, generally speaking, the occult worldview and how it regards how it would go about taking over the world for occultists' purposes. And so I began a journey then that understanding what this man had to say, and he had a lot of things that he taught about the plan or how an occult world takeover would come about. And I remember that he was among this group of people that was called the California Desert Contactees back in those days. And these were actually a number of fellows. George Adamski comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all more or less one thing in common. They had experiences with UFOs out in the California desert and, in the early 50s. And Alan was among those people. And Alan describes these events in his life at that time in the early 50s. And apparently it was at this time in his life that he began to learn and understand all of these things. And so then switch in here now to 1966 when I first met him. And And then the next summer was the summer of 1967, and that was really the big event in Haight-Ashbury. There were over 100,000 hippies gathered there at that time, and by this time we were living next to Golden Gate Park, and we were actually, the house we were in was next door to Janis Joplin's house.
Wow.
And we were about a block off of Haight and right next to the Golden Gate Park. And I remember we all, the whole commune, went for a hike on the ocean beaches north of San Francisco one afternoon. And I just glanced out over the surf, and something caught my eye up in the western sky, and I think it was perhaps 200 feet away from me, and it was a disc, and it looked like it was made out of aluminum, and it looked like it may have been, you know, 50 feet in diameter or something like this, and it kind of rolled in perspective, and it was just a perfect classic, what they call a daylight disc, and I was excited to see this, and I shouted out to everybody, hey, look at this, you know, and by then it was gone. It just simply blinked out. It disappeared.
Hmm.
And Alan just kind of gave me a knowing smile. He seemed to understand just exactly what it was that had happened. And, you know, other people have said, and I've read other people having said that these things did tend to follow him around, and that it was not all that uncommon for UFOs to be seen in his vicinity.
You know, that's interesting, because we were watching the presentation that Bill Schneblin gave down at the Ancient of Days conference in Roswell from this past summer. And he...
Are you familiar with Bill?
Yeah, I've read some of his stuff on the Internet, yes.
Okay, so you know what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he mentioned that that was a very similar experience to his while he was training under a Grandmaster Druid.
Yes.
Down in the mountains of northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's Eureka Springs down in that area, but you know, somewhere in northern Arkansas in the Ozarks. And he said that it happened dozens of times while they were down there studying that summer.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
again, when they asked the master about it, and he just gave a knowing smile and said, let's just return to our studies class.
That's about it.
So what happened then?
Well, that summer, I remember in June of 1967, it was really a memorable day for me. And you know how images and pictures kind of lodge in your mind and you remember them for the rest of your life. And I remember one sunshining day walking out across the grass of Golden Gate Park and thinking to myself about the amazing things that had just been happening in Israel that past week. It was a six-day war, the 1967 war, and early part of June, and somehow that all seemed related in some way that I couldn't at that time really comprehend to the things that we were living through, and that has stuck in my mind all my life. And then it was only perhaps a week or two later than that, one Saturday night, probably was the most memorable event of my life. We were all sitting around in this big old Victorian home. I think there were 30, 35 people all together at that time, and it was Saturday night, and it was party night, party time. And, you know, we were having good times, and then about 3 in the morning, something happened that just absolutely knocked the wind out of everybody there. About 3 in the morning, suddenly there just fell this hush over the whole room, and I glanced over at Alan, and he was sitting on the couch. And I was just shocked to see his appearance giving away to a completely different appearance. It seemed like he became enveloped in a cloud of light, and then he appeared to be just radiantly glowing, and he looked like an Eastern Zen master, he looked very Tibetan, actually, like what you'd expect a Tibetan Rinpoche to look like, or mm-hmm. a Tibetan adept. And it was just profoundly beautiful. He just was like an angel of light, just radiantly glowing. And he was just completely overshadowed by the entity that had been invoked into our presence in some manner, in some way, and I've never understood exactly how, because I wasn't aware of you know, what might have been going on that would lead up to this event. at any rate, all of us in the room were just absolutely stunned. We were just in a state of shock. And then this entity stood up and walked over to where we were sitting and looked at us and said, "I am Lucifer."
Still glowing?
Yes.
Still radiant?
Yes.
And, of course, Lucifer being the Latin form of the Hebrew Hillel ben Shakar, meaning light bringer, son of the dawn.
Yes. So he went back over to the couch and sat down, and then the event was over, and then Alan resumed looking like Alan. But what was just amazing during those few minutes was how completely, totally, the extent to which Alan no longer looked like Alan. It was just amazing. The overshadowing entity here just completely modified his appearance. And, you know, it was about 8 years ago that I ran into somebody who was finally able to explain to me some more things that I've never comprehended. And this person had been in Sedona for a few years. And, of course, that's the big New Age community down in Arizona where a lot of channeling takes place. People will channel various entities. And what this person told me is that it really isn't all that uncommon for this phenomena to take place, that a person doing channeling can be so completely overshadowed by the possessing entity that their appearance just completely changes to the appearance of a spiritual being. And that was the first and only time in my life that I've had corroboration of what might have taken place that night. Other people have seen this too. And so that was interesting for me to be able to put it into a context like that, channeling.
Did this guy begin a new occult ministry at that point? Did he change as far as the way he behaved, you know, as a human?
Well, no, actually, it didn't seem to be even a hiccup in Alan's behavior and his teachings. Not really. But what happened shortly after that, and I think by this time it was 4:30 in the morning, Alan, there were just a few of us who were really interested to see more about what it is that had taken place. And there were perhaps four or five of us, and Alan took us all the way up to the top floor of the old house in his bedroom, and he reached into his chest of drawers, and he pulled out in an old occult book, and he thumbed to a page that was just this most beautiful pen and ink drawing, and I've never been able to locate it, and I've tried the rest of my life to find where this might have been, but as a work of art, it was really quite stunning. And it showed a drawing that was entitled Lucifer Rising, and it showed this haggard angel, his clothes all tattered and beat up, and he was rising up out of the black, inky depths. He was rising up out of the abyss, and he was rising up into just this most brilliant white light at the top of the picture. And that was a very striking visual image, and it's something I'll never forget as long as I live.
Now,
the appearance of that pen and ink drawing.
You're looking back on it now through the eyes of a Christian, but at the
yes,
time,
I am, and this
time,
corresponds to Revelation 9, and what we're looking at here is the beast from the bottomless pit. You know,
sure.
This is how occultists perceive the event, rising up out of the abyss, an angelic entity. I don't know if others have had these same thoughts, but I've thought all my life long about, you know, who is Lucifer? And from about 1980 to 95, I studied everything that Sitchin wrote, and I was just assiduously studying all of his books. And by that time, I was firmly in a biblical worldview myself. And during those years, I was attempting to see if anything might correspond between what Sitchin was writing about, and I wanted to see if there was anything that would correlate or correspond to a biblical worldview. And those years were a laborious process because, as it turns out, it's very difficult to make correlations.
You don't get this in Sunday school.
No,
no, you sure don't. I've thought about who Lucifer could be. And I know that most Christians, their understanding is that Lucifer is Satan. And to be honest, I question that. I have wondered myself if Lucifer might... You know, the Bible is silent on this.
Right.
There are texts in Isaiah that describe Lucifer as the son of the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I've wondered if Lucifer might correspond to Merodach. Now, we know that Enki, and I think you've been talking about this with Peter Goodgame,
mm-hmm.
Just splendid interviews that you're doing with him. He correlates Enki. With Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And if that correlation holds, and if also we believe that at the end of the age that Satan is going to counterfeit the Trinity of God, then I think we should expect to see Satan also have a Trinity of his own. And how I view this is that Lucifer could indeed be not Satan, but the son of Satan. And of course, the most famous son of Satan is Marduk.
Mm-hmm. Enki, right, because Marduk in the Babylonian pantheon was the son of Enki, right?
Yes, exactly, yes. And so now the Bible in Jeremiah 50 mentions Merodach, and I tend to think that this correlates with the son of Satan myself. Mm-hmm.
You know, all of this corresponds with Crowley, because he talked about Lamb, and I think his adherents refer to, do they actually say Horus, but they're talking about the slain son who's going to rise.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it. Well, the Revelation chapter 9 talks about Apollo or Apollyon
mm-hmm.
rising, and if Apollyon is Lucifer, and if Lucifer is indeed Marduk, the son of Enki, then I can see why we're in the Middle East. It's a continuation of the Apollo program. You know, the Apollo program originally put us on the moon, and I think presently the Apollo program has ventures in the Middle East. Now, if Enki corresponds with Neptune,
mm-hmm.
or Poseidon, and Neptune, there's that word root, Nep, N-E-P.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps Enki also corresponds to Oans, and Robert Temple wrote the Sirius Mystery, and he described how Berossus, the Babylonian priest,
mm-hmm.
had first brought us the story of the fishman god.
Mm-hmm.
And Neptune is a fishman god out of Eridu. And we've talked
right. Of course, Enki was the god of the sweet waters, the abyss,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
was below
Abzu.
His temple at Eridu, the Abzu. Right.
Mm-hmm. So today we have the fish hat popes and the cardinals with all of their fish hats. Mm-hmm.
And the Merovingian line that claim that they go back to, is it Dagon?
Yes.
Yeah, the fish god.
Exactly. And the ichthys symbol for Christianity.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Oh,
all
wow.
of these things, you see, the biblical worldview and the occult worldview have points of correspondence, and they're coming at it from 180 degrees.
Right.
Completely different understandings, but the same topics throughout them seem to have a lot of points of commonality.
Well, exactly. In fact, the gentleman, Alan, that you were talking about, isn't he the one... I know you link to several other sites that are off of your own site
uh-huh,
to
yes.
explain these people that you used to interact with and study with. This gentleman seemed to think that he was essentially the comforter that Jesus promised.
Yes, yes, exactly. He saw himself in that role. Yes.
We're talking with David Duncan, who has got an excellent website in which he outlines what he believes to be the New World Order scam, and we're in the process of examining some of the points of correlation between the biblical worldview and the occult worldview, which, if I understand correctly, offers just enough truth to hook you in and then hit you with, and then throws a curveball and leads you down the wrong path.
That's it.
It's fascinating in that the response of most Christian teachers today is to avoid the topic altogether. That, you know, rather than examining it and trying to learn and study and know thy enemy, the response seems to be, no, let's just not even go there.
Mm-hmm.
Which leaves a lot of Christians who are, well, of curious mind,
mm-hmm.
more vulnerable than if they had actually been prepared for
it. You know, especially if you're younger, because you know this, Dave. When you were younger, you're very curious, whether you're a Christian or not. Mm-hmm. You're very, very curious. And if someone comes along, pays attention to you, and says, you know what, you're special.
That's what happens, yeah.
Yeah, and Daniel Eaton, who is a contributing editor at Watcher Magazine, wrote a very interesting piece, which we just posted yesterday, and he makes a very good point, in that while we are busy trying to protect our children from a fictional character in a pointy hat who rides around on a broom playing Quidditch, we are avoiding the very real supernatural that Harry Potter supposed to lead to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the real danger lies.
Yep. Yeah.
And so that's why we're really pleased to be talking with you, especially from your firsthand experience of meeting Lucifer face to face. I don't think there are many among us who can make that claim.
And you know, all my life I've tried to weigh that on the scales, and ultimately I do come to the conclusion that that's exactly who I met. Thought about that a lot, as you might imagine. And
well, sure.
That's
my
conclusion.
That's not exactly the sort of thing you can bring up at the office. At least maybe on casual Friday, but no other time. So, you're in Haight-Ashbury, and you've had this experience with Alan Noonan. And he's laying out for you the plan, things that he believes are going to take place in the end, to sort of turn the tables on Christianity.
Yes,
how does that plan unfold?
Well, you know, the plan as he understood it, I think one of the most important parts of the plan was the concept that by the time the end of the age would arrive, that all of the really important positions in finance and government and industry and corporations, all of these, you know, in entertainment, the arts, media, religion, all of these institutions would be controlled by occultists in the higher level positions. And that was an important part of what he taught, mm-hmm. and the occult takeover. And, you know, he viewed it as a Masonic takeover.
Okay. And, now, as you know, we've had some discussion with some folks over the past weeks, including an upcoming interview with Eric John Phelps, when he discusses the Masonic influence and the control of the Masons by the Jesuit order. And so you're saying that the influence is not just, you know, in the lodges around America and Europe, but throughout government, finance, entertainment, and religion. It's everywhere, basically.
You mean it's not Republican and Democrat?
No, it's occult at the highest levels.
And that's the other point I wanted to get to. While I think there are some evangelical Christians who would be inclined to agree that the Roman Catholic Church may be under the influence of dark forces, I think a lot of them will also take comfort in saying to themselves that, at least our religious leaders are still okay. Our guys like Robertson and Falwell and D. James Kennedy and Phyllis Schlafly and all of and Tim LaHaye and Beverly LaHaye and so on and so forth. And I'm not going to point to any one of them in particular and say, you know, that any of them are.
You just named them.
Yeah, but I'm just picking names as our most prominent evangelical leaders. But are you saying, or would Alan Noonan say, that those positions of leadership within the Protestant Christian community in America have also been infiltrated?
Yeah, well, that's certainly what he implied. Of course, that was 38 years ago, 39 years ago. But that's exactly what the implication is that occultists are and have been making a very special effort to congeal their positions of power, and that those positions of power would be all across the board in all of our institutions, education, religious, the entire establishment.
You know, Russ Dizdar talks about the Black Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that this is a big game of risk.
Yes.
Get all of your pieces in place, mm-hmm. and then you set off the trigger.
Yeah, the trigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I guess the position, things are almost lined up.
Yes, they are, yeah. And you know how the cartoons on Saturday morning picture this weight on the end of a rope, and the strands of the rope one by one are popping. It goes fraying. Pop, 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 mm-hmm. pop. And you just cringe because you know the weight is going to drop. It just amazes me that the strands are still popping and it hasn't come down.
Well, you know what? God can hold it together when mm-hmm. we see nothing there.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. So now what would you see from your study over the last, say, 25 years or so, and what you see in politics and in the news today that would indicate that, say, the more prominent leaders in American Christianity are wolves in sheep's clothing?
Yes, right. Well, there is something that's been going on these last couple of years. In the Jeff Rentz published some articles about it. It's regarding the Reverend Moon.
Sun Myung Moon, the Unification Church.
Yes, the Unification Church. And I don't know how it came to be, but Moon somehow became a billionaire in the process of starting his church. And one of the projects that he's embarked upon in the United States is to fund and create the CNP, Council for National Policy.
Okay.
And the CNP is a very wealthy organization, as you might expect.
Mm-hmm.
And they have managed to put very timely amounts of money into the hands of people in evangelical Christianity who, are at points of need, financial need. And,
Didn't I hear that Jerry Falwell University, Liberty University, was bailed out by Reverend Moon, wasn't it?
Bailed out, yes, exactly.
Oh.
So he was in a position where he could use some money. And Moon took care of it. So
no strings attached, of course.
Huh?
No strings attached, of course.
No strings attached, of course. Now, you wonder about that. Of course, we can't really know about those things that are going on behind the scene, but, I mean, how could you assume otherwise?
But it doesn't matter. How can anyone who calls himself or herself a true believer, part of the body of Christ,
take money
from a man who claims to be the Messiah?
Mm-hmm.
You just couldn't do it. You couldn't, and you should not.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this whole Christian right-wing evangelical, at least ostensibly it would appear that they are, this whole movement has been largely responsible for putting George Bush into power. And George Bush is His re-election was pretty much guaranteed by evangelical Christianity. Of course, all the Christians think that they're, putting up a fight for a biblical, or what remains of what was once a biblical constitution and a biblical nation.
Right.
And we think that we're securing, hold the deck and draw the line. And we need to move toward a conservative government, and I think that this has been is being used against them. It comes back to, for me at least, George Bush Sr.'s very famous New World Order speech, and I think that must have been on 9/11 of 1990, where he used the term New World Order.
It was.
And that kind of, for me at any rate, brought to a close an era of time during which, if you wanted to read about the New World Order, there were two or maybe three obscure mail order book houses that you'd have to go to in order to get books on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that time, that speech of his, the field of study called the New World Order has just exploded on the scene. And mm-hmm. at the moment, the New World Order is approaching a multi-million-dollar industry. It's got to be. But what is interesting about it is a very large share of the industry, and I might call it an industry, New World Order information industry, a very large share of it resides in the context of New Age thinkers, New
yeah.
Age folks. For instance, Rents.com, that's an example of what I would call a cultish left,
right.
Left-leaning people who have a New Age paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact of this threat of a new world order is now being perceived as is a big thing by New Agers.
And who do they blame for it?
Yeah, George Bush. Mm-hmm.
And his supporters, the conservative Christian right.
Yes, exactly. That's it.
Okay.
So the New Agers have honed this thing to the point where they're what they feel is the greatest threat to them is this horrible Bush-type New World Order that George Sr. got started on his. He got the ball rolling way back then. And the Bush dynasty, of course, is associated with Prescott Bush, the grandfather of our current president. And Prescott is known to have supported Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
So people in the occultish left or the New Age movement, they perceive all of this as a very great threat to their dreams of a metaphysical lullaby New Age.
I like that. Metaphysical lullaby. Remember that phrase.
Well, there are a lot of serious crimes that the New Agers are saying Bush is responsible for, and certainly not the least of them would be our own Reichstag fire, 9-1-1.
Sure.
And JFK researchers point how Jack was trying to get us out from underneath the Federal Reserve with his executive order, what was it, 11100 or something like that?
Yeah.
In other words, what JFK apparently was doing was trying to get us out from underneath the financial domination of the Rothschilds. And so, and people who research the grassy knoll are fond of telling us that George Bush Sr. was probably not too far away.
I've heard that. I've also heard Nixon was in town.
Yeah.
So with these thoughts in mind, that the New Age perceives the Bush administration as being a fascist organization in cahoots with neocons, Jewish people, or at least ostensibly Jewish people, then the whole stage is just set for the Bushes to go down really hard. And, you know, the Bush family, you know how people say, well, it's all in who you know. It's all in who you know. And myself, I kind of think that the Bush family motto might be kind of more like, it's all in who you take down with you.
Hmm. In this case being the conservative Christians who have supported and believe that they're doing a good thing by voting for an allegedly conservative Republican.
Definitely
yeah.
Interesting.
So the New Age or metaphysical or occult communities right now are being polarized with the Christian right, and we're looking the potential for a divided nation here. And, of course, I think the Bushes themselves, they're doing all of this with a wink and a nod to their fellow occultists, and people just don't see that aspect of the thing going on.
You put together an excellent page in your site showing all of the numerological connections between the various events of the last 50, 60 years, all of the 11s and 5s and 6s and 3s. It's just it's mind-boggling. I mean, as you mentioned, 11 years to the day between the New World Order speech and the attack that took down the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
How many days was it exactly between the invasion of Iraq and the landing on the carrier?
Well, let's see. Now, there was exactly 555 days until the from 9/11 until the ground war began, and then it was exactly 18 months.
18666.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. It was 555 days until the air campaign began.
Right. Okay.
And then it was 18 months until the ground war began. And so, you know, here we have 555, and we have an 18, which is 666. And I guess the reason I wanted to document these things in my website is because I want to show that the Bushes are very connected to cultists. And I think, you know, people would have to go in and dig into my website in order to see all of the details that are there. But I think that's important for me to make my case in this thing. It's important to provide evidence that the Bushes are occultists from day one, all of them. It's skull and bones and the whole thing.
Sure, and things that I hadn't even paid attention to at the time. When he landed on the carrier deck, wasn't it May 1st?
Yes, 5-1,
right. Which is what, Beltane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beltane. And David Meyer, Last Trumpet, put together an excellent summary of that, and I quoted him on my website. And it just reveals the depth to which occult numerology is implicit in all everything that the Bush administration does.
Our guest is Dave Duncan, the author of a – well, I guess you'd call him an author because the website has certainly got the depth of a really good book, The New World Order Scam, showing how Christians in America are being taken for a ride by occultists posing as the conservative right. Dave, now you mentioned some of the connections between the prominent conservative Christians and the group supporting the president, the Council for National Policy, and the link to Sun Myung-moon, who, of course, has, blasphemed is the only way you can describe it, by calling himself the new Messiah or the true Messiah.
Oh, he's not the only one calling him that.
Oh, he had himself crowned by congressmen in Washington, D.C. Was it last March?
Yeah.
March of 2004. There's an excellent blog out there, by the way, called Where in the World is Sun Myung-moon? The author's name is escaping me at the moment, but I'll put a link to it in the show notes because it's really eye-opening when you see all of the people of power that Moon is connected to.
He's traveling with now.
Exactly. He's traveling with Neil Bush on his 100-city tour promoting world peace. Interestingly, he's one of his programs, Moon's, and this is just a bit of a rabbit trail, so I hope you forgive me, was to convince African-American churches to take down the crosses, African-American Christian churches to take down the crosses inside their churches because it's a symbol of divisiveness. And until the very last minute, the White House had directed that there were no crosses displayed during the inaugural parade.
Yes.
In 2005, January 2005. And finally, some Christian groups complained loud enough that the administration backed off on that request. But it is interesting, and it makes you wonder how much influence Moon really has with this White House. And who are his handlers? I mean, I know that he's got connections with Korean intelligence, which, of course, is heavily tied in with the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there are some strong strains of occultism inside the intelligence community and things that have been happening in there. We're really getting into some, through the looking glass type stuff here.
Well, we really are. We'll go back to the plan. How is that proceeding?
I guess, the last element that we should ramp up about the plan, or maybe the last two elements, would be that Alan talked quite a bit about how there would be a double cross at the end of the age.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what was implied by him speaking about this is that the Christians would go down pretty hard. In fact, he talked about how UFOs would be involved in what he called natural removal of the Christians, how the people who were not able to evolve into the new order of the ages would have to be taken out, and he felt that they would be taken out by a natural process that would be assisted by the UFOs. In fact, he mentioned that the UFOs would use little plasma fireballs, and of course this remains yet in the future, so we'll have to see whether or not that comes true. But the other thing that he talked about was how that there would be just a strange twist of fate at the end of the age, what he called the double cross. And the double cross, of course, reminds me of the cross of Lorraine.
Uh-huh. And, we knew you were going there.
Yeah, we were looking at each other.
And, of course, that brings to mind the recent story of Scott Gillespie.
And, the Black Sun Society uses the double cross as a motif, and so does a major New York-based oil company.
And that's the image Scott Gillespie is allegedly to have carved on the back of Pam Vitale.
I remember that. This is just a few weeks ago.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned the oil company, of course. You're talking about ExxonMobil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are a lot of people in the world right now who are extremely upset with the Bush administration for what they're doing in the Middle East, the war and everything. And this past year, there have been a lot of rumors floating around about how our president is relapsing back into alcohol and that he's showing serious mental strain and perhaps even mental pathology, that he has explosive outbursts of temper among his staffers. And I think a picture is being painted here to make this whole thing believable. I think that George Bush is ripe for the role that he's playing on the world stage. And at some point in time, he could just kind of disappear off the stage, and all of the horrible cumulative effects of what he's done in his administration, of course, that's a New Age point of view, would collapse upon the thing, and then everybody would be looking, well, who put him back in office? Who supported him? You know, how did we get into this fix? You know, and if this triggers World War III, if we have a short nuclear World War III, as Pike envisioned it so long ago, well, people are going to ask, well, who's to blame?
Who's to blame? We need a scapegoat.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's those Christians who...
And next summer we have a movie coming out on 666, called The Beast, and it's about the fact that the movie claims that Christians made up Jesus.
Well, you know, my take on this thing is that the term, there are three words, New World Order, are just so closely and tightly associated with the Bush family that... I'm just wondering if all of the folks who are researching New World Order are barking up the wrong tree. I think that at the last minute, the occultists could bring in an occult world government and finish everybody with a bait and switch and leave the whole New World Order high and dry, and everybody will be hating it and pointing to it and say, oh, well, wasn't that a horrible thing? And look what it caused. It caused Armageddon. You know, they could refer in retrospect to a nuclear war in the Middle East as having been Armageddon, and of course we know that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But the world does not, and the world would not comprehend the differences between a nuclear war in the Middle East and what would be what we expect as Christians, the second coming, and that's the real Armageddon.
You know, speaking of the Middle East, you said something a little while ago that really piqued my curiosity. You were talking mm-hmm. about the Apollo program on the moon, and how it's being continued in the Middle East.
Apparently so.
Could you explain?
Yeah, I mean, the Twin Towers were a gigantic 11, and if you look at Revelation 9, and Revelation 9:11, and said they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and Greek tongue Apollyon. Now, we know that... if this beast that's rising out of the bottomless pit, we see in Revelation 9 that there are really strange things that are being released out of the pit with him that are rather like scorpions with the power to sting and torture. I come back to, you know, the possibility that the son of Satan could be this Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
Or Marduk.
Right, or what Egyptians called Horus,
mm-hmm.
or mm-hmm. Tammuz.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be at least a possible correspondence here that the beast from the pit would be the son of Satan, Lucifer, as I would see it.
So another Apollo project, but this time... to free Apollo from the abyss.
Yes, yes.
Perhaps in the manner described by Stan Deo, by use of some Tesla technology to open a portal.
Well, yeah, and you know, that was just amazing, his insight about what a ziggurat might consist of.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that it would be rather similar to a step-down transformer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared with us a steel that showed Marduk appearing at the top of a ziggurat.
Yes.
With hordes of fallen, perhaps sacrificial victims,
mm-hmm.
lying along the side of this monument, and to be happy to send you a copy of that. We should probably post that too. Ask Stan's permission and then post it so people can see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's really striking.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I think is really interesting about this. You start with Crowley, who tried to open up a gateway.
Yes.
And then you go to Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, who tried to open it up even further.
Yes.
Well, you compare that, at least in my mind, I compare that with the belief of some Hebrew scholars, rabbis, who believe that they have to get that temple built because the Messiah, and they don't, of course, agree that Jesus Christ fulfilled that role. They're awaiting their Messiah, which, of course, we know he's already come. But they believe that the third temple has to be built for Christ to come through that eastern gate.
Yes.
Now, yeah. We also have the Dominionists here in the United States and in Great Britain who believe that they have to prepare the world politically for
yes.
Christ's return.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got the New World, the occultists who are opening gates and preparing for Lucifer's rising.
Trying to bring
all the same thing.
Trying to bring back the Lovecraftian great old ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who you describe as the beasts of the abyss, the fallen angels who've been cast down into Tartarus.
It's amazing to me that the same lie is packaged in at least three different ways.
Yeah, it just keeps popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even more amazing that rather than teaching this in church, in Sunday school, if not from the pulpit, but at least in Sunday school classes at our Christian churches, we are, as Christians, for the most part, unprepared for this because we aren't getting any of this. This might not be something you want to teach to kids under the age of 12, but when you're beginning to come of age and understand a little bit more of the world, it would seem to me that this is the kind of information you would want to have before you go out and, say, face the atmosphere at college.
Mm-hmm.
In the world. And it's something that the Christian church has really avoided for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure why. Do you have an opinion on that, David? I mean, do you think it's just afraid of passing out too much information, being dangerous?
Well, the preachers are all trained in the seminaries, religious institutions, and those go all across the entire spectrum, but they all have to maintain a semblance of respectability.
True.
Intellectual respectability. And if they get a little too far out on out on the edges, that it's not a very respectable position. And I think that the whole occult aspect of this thing, the threat that we're facing, it's just wrapped up, kept away, put under wraps. And people don't grasp what's going on. Any topic like this that elicits a reaction of fear, and I know from my own family, my extended family, I'm thinking, it's just impossibly difficult to try to communicate about these things because people just throw up iron bars immediately. You cannot go there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Derek said a few minutes ago that he's not so sure that you could teach it to kids under 12, but I think we probably can.
I think you could.
And I think if it's done right, that's a great time to do it because kids under 12 mm-hmm. are falling from the time that they're watching cartoons.
Well, that's true.
Well, Walt Disney knew about this. You take a look at all of the stuff he was doing in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah. Kids are under the sway of this.
Sure.
You don't catch them early.
Yeah, and they did. They caught them early. If you go back and look at some of the things that Disney was doing in those years, there's a whole bunch of occult inferences that are made into the minds of children at that point in time.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's right.
Chuck Missler has a very interesting observation with which he starts his mm-hmm. PowerPoint presentation on the return of the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
He says something like, polydimensional mathematics can only be comprehended by two types of people. The first are specially trained mathematicians who have taken many years of schooling. The second mm-hmm. are young children. It's also true that if you don't have your worldview pretty well set by the time you're 18, mm-hmm. well, you do have your – the thing is you have your worldview pretty well set by the time you're 18. And if it's mm-hmm. not a biblical worldview, by that point, the odds are pretty slim that you're going to change after the age of 18.
The building blocks are all in the ages up to 12 or so. When you get into the teen years, you become, things start to seem less concrete, and so you're exploring. But you're doing it all based on those mm-hmm. building blocks from those earlier years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
Mm.
And then that's why I was so lucky that I was brought up in a Christian home, because those building blocks were in place, and I could relate to them later on when I was learning different things.
Amen, and that is so biblical, no matter what happens, if you mm-hmm. give them a good foundation. And you know what? We have been saying this, and I think you'd agree, Dave, that you don't have to run away from any of this with your kids.
No.
In fact, I know not all parents may do it the way we did, but when Harry Potter came out, we actually, you know, Derek read the book with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it gave us an opportunity as a family to discuss what about that book laid traps for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you know what my parents learned when I was a kid is that laying too heavy a stricture down, you know, I was not permitted to do a lot of things, and a very, very tight rein was put on me. And the result of all that was that I went into an extreme rebellion, and I think this is what happens with children. If you say don't put beans in your nose, you know, they're going to do it.
Okay, I actually swallowed pennies all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, the very thing you try to prevent could end up being the very thing that's thrown in your face and bringing up children. So.
Well, now, to summarize the thesis that you've laid out and document at your website, the New World Order scam, American Christians are being led by prominent leaders, evangelicals, who have encouraged us to continue to support a political party rather than going back to the Bible and checking the works of our leaders against what is scriptural.
Mm-hmm.
The net result being that we've engaged in a war for profit, in fact have been doing this for years and years if we go back and look at history, at least since the Teddy Roosevelt administration, if not further.
Sure.
And we are polluting and poisoning the Middle East. We didn't even really talk about this, but with depleted uranium, which is just leading to some horrendous, horrendous mutations and illnesses there, not just in the people who live there, but in our soldiers who are coming back.
Yes.
People like Dave and Joyce at the Power Hour are doing some great research on that. Mm-hmm. This is all going to come out someday. You can't hide all of this.
No, and you're right. It will be blamed on.
And it will be blamed on evangelical Christians who put this administration into power. Mm-hmm. Is that summed up pretty well?
Well, yeah. And, you know, what was it? Just a few years ago, Bush White House was sending out Christmas cards that showed the phoenix. And, of course, in mythology, the phoenix is the bird that self-ignites and combusts in this great fire, and from the ashes it rises again. And this really does remind me of George Bush. I think that he is a suicide figure. I think that he is purposefully playing a suicidal role on the stage. I think that, you know, history is going to be such that he'll go down with all kinds of things to blame on him, but he probably just sort of disappear in the ashes. It's like I said on my website, if this is the case, if he's taking us Christians down by suiciding himself, that's pretty heavy, you know. That's a dirty job, but, you know, it could be that the Bushes are saying, well, it's a dirty job, but somebody has to do it.
And certainly they're being compensated for their role. So you've got occultists on the left, New Agers who are getting ready to point the finger at the occultists on the right,
mm-hmm.
who are leading us down this path. So we've got the Hegelian dialectic there, and from that conflict then will come the true New World Order.
Yes, right.
Which will be, of course, an occultic-based New World Order.
Right.
I think that the words New World Order are going to go down with the Bushes, and I think that they're going to have a new name for it.
Well, sure.
It's going to be an occult world order. But this New World Order, per se, I think it's going to become a dirty word.
Well, yeah.
And it already is. You look at how big the movement is among the New Age people right now. I mean, this whole thing about the New World Order is just taken off explosively, and it's all over the Internet.
Well, sure. I think that it's just too obvious. There's no deceptive value there. It's like thinking that anyone who's demonically possessed or under the influence of the evil one is going to look like, Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
That's too obvious.
Too obvious.
Well, telling a child, don't go with a stranger. And the child thinks stranger, ooh, ugly, mean, scary, monster.
Yeah.
No. Could be a really nice old lady that comes and says, hi, your mommy told me to come get you.
Yeah. And Paul made it very clear that we shouldn't be surprised when that happens, because Satan himself can appear, as you saw, David, as an angel of light.
Yes.
So we are, as Christians, once again, being called to use our brains. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind.
Uh-huh.
And that means not following along just because a prominent figure who is interviewed on Fox News regularly says this is what we should support.
You know, here's what we just found out about Fox News. They were just recently – was it just recently that the money was
– Within the last year or so, yeah.
Yeah, they're partly owned by the Saudi Arabian royal family.
Oh,
Fox News.
Yeah, a very prominent member of the Saudi royal family, very wealthy billionaire, multi-billionaire, fifth wealthiest man in the world, according to Forbes, has invested heavily in Fox News and is now openly bragging about changing the reporting. You notice that Fox News doesn't say homicide bombers anymore?
Right.
Yeah, well, apparently this fellow's taking credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Sean Hannity goes on the air and has the gall to rip anybody who dares disagree with the Republican Party platform.
Yeah, right.
And,
yeah.
Going so far as to call him un-American. I won't go that way.
But people who are spellbound by this whole Fox perspective, this is nothing but trouble.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we were taken in at first, too, because it was such a welcome change from what we were seeing on CNN and MSNBC and ABC.
Spent several years in front of CNN, you're ready for a change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, and it's probably intentional.
Yeah,
sure.
We even bought Sean Hannity's book when it came out.
And
today Sharon made the comment, you know, now if we had a choice, I think I'd rather invite Alan Colmes over for dinner.
Well, you know, we seem to kind of bounce back and forth between the ends of our selves.
Well, you know, there's one thing that never changes, though, and that is God.
Yeah.
Scripture.
Yeah.
And you can always find those answers there. So, you know, dig in the newspaper, but dig in the scriptures, too, to interpret what you read.
Right. That is the anchor to which we have to hold, and that is the plumb line against which we have to measure what we see around us. And
absolutely. You know, that reminds me of how you wrapped up your first interview with Patrick Heron. It was just so wonderful because I think the last 5-10 minutes of his interview, he was just quoting biblical verses, and it was just so wonderful. It just felt so good to hear those things said once again.
See, I'd like to have him and Alan Combs.
Because if Patty didn't have Alan...
I think he could convert Alan Combs.
Think he could. If anyone could. Yeah.
If anyone could, he could. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we need to get a true Irishman like Patty on Fox News instead of those fake Irishmen like O'Reilly and Hannity.
Yeah. So are you going to write a book based on all the stuff? You've done a lot of research, and you've had an interesting life.
Yeah, it has been interesting. All of these things that we talk about and that PID is all about are just the things that I've been passionately interested in all my life, and to try to assimilate these things and build some kind of a perspective. And what amazes me is that still, obviously we're constrained to remain within the confines of what is prophesied in the Bible, but it's just astonishing to think of the amazing kind of variations that could take place, how things totally unforeseen and unexpected could take place and still remain within the framework that the Bible has pictured for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how broad the worldview is within the scope of Scripture. Sharon and I have talked about this many times, that as writers, there is such so many colors with which to paint when you're writing. I mean, you've got everything in there. You've got dragons, you've got wizards, you've got demons and angels and epic battles of cosmic proportion. And yet the Christian church, for the most part, has, as well as our friend Daniel puts it, has neutered the Bible, taken most of the supernatural elements out of the Bible. And now we're saying, no, all of that stuff ended at the apostolic age. That doesn't go on anymore. We don't do exorcisms, not since we discovered psychiatry and psychotropic drugs.
So God ceased to be supernatural, right? Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, how many of our seminaries push that worldview onto the people who are supposed to go out and teach the next generation of Bible-believing Christians. It's a secular worldview. We have to maintain a respectability, so we cannot teach that there are other supernatural entities other than, you know, God, Satan, and, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a leash and doesn't really get around much anymore. Well, Dave Duncan, it has been a pleasure talking with you. We'd love to talk with you further sometime. Can we touch base with you again in the future and have you back?
Absolutely.
All right. We will put a link to your website. Is there an email address people could use if they want to send questions to you about some of the things that you've learned?
Mm-hmm. There sure is on the front page of my website. I give my email address.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll link to your website from the show notes so they can go there anytime they want. And I recommend bookmarking it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. It's a well worth the read. And David links to a lot of fascinating articles that document what he's based his conclusions on. It's just fascinating read. The New World Order Scam, Dave Duncan, thank you for being our guest on PID Radio.
You betcha. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye.
David Duncan's original NewWorldOrderScam.com website is no longer online, but it has been archived. And I'll post a link to that in the show notes at PIDradio.com so that you can read Dave's story in his own words and see for yourself if the evidence points to Christians being set up to take a fall. We welcome your comments, suggestions, bouquets, and brickbats. You can send those via email to radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Don't forget, episode 11 of the free audiobook edition of The God Conspiracy is now online at podiobooks.com. Post a link to that in the show notes as well. Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening. This is PID Radio.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. And living in the past.